In a world where the internet is filled with trash-talking 12-year-olds, one website stands out as a safe haven of decent human behavior. Co-Optimus.
Oh yeah!
Co-Optimus, your prime source for co-op gaming.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Co-op the Cast. We're on episode number 125. It's Monday, May 19th, 2014. And the crew is back together. Jason's back in the country. Locke is... I don't remember. Where were you last week, Locke? You were working. You were a working man.
I was shooting behind-the-scenes footage for a short film.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Fancy. And Mike and I were killing orcs.
Yes, so, yes, we were.
Let's jump right into what we've been playing, because we actually have a lot to cover tonight. It's a busy episode. And why don't we start with Jason, since... He probably hasn't been playing too much.
No, I really haven't. I've been in Ireland for the past week, so you know it's not much to do there but drink and be merry.
Be married.
Be married, yeah, and be married.
Well, that's the show, folks.
Yeah, okay. We'll see you next week.
So while I was there, I did bring a co-op board game with me. I brought Sentinels of the Multiverse with me and enjoyed
it. It's a good one. Games.
Yeah. Had some fun times playing that with the fam. And
Which hero were you?
Let's see. For the first game, I was Night Mist, casting the spells.
Yeah.
And then I was...
That happens to me when I have to pee in the middle of the night.
Thanks.
The Argent.
Yeah, what happened this episode, man? We are.
Yeah, silly. Just going on.
Brought
downhill.
To you by this wine.
Then I was the Argent Adept, singing songs and supporting people. And then I was. Who was I last time? Oh, Omnitron X. That's right.
Yeah, Omnitron with your ablative coating and all that.
Yeah. Funny good story. Stuff. The first time like we ever played the game, we were playing with one of. Mike and I are friends, so we've known forever, Pete, and, you know, this villain comes out, and he does toxic damage to everybody every single round, and we're just like, what do we do, Pete? And he was playing Omnitron X, and he searches through his deck, he uses a card to search through his deck, and he puts on plating that reduces toxic damage. He's like, all right, your turn. So basically, he was like, oh, I'm protected, all right, fuck you guys.
Yeah, well, that is how he, that's how he rolls.
Yep.
Yes.
But victory was ours each time, so we were pretty happy about that.
It's a good co-op. That's actually one of the best co-op games I've played as far as tabletop, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like, I play with my mom, my wife, my brother and sister, and everyone had a great time, and it was awesome. So
why don't you give them the 30-second pitch in case these guys don't know what Sentinels of the Multiverse is.
Good point. So Sentinels of the Multiverse is a co-op card-based game. So every single person who plays can choose a hero character, and they're like pre-assembled decks. The characters have their own special powers and like little unique mechanics. So like one's a time-traveling cowboy who puts bounties that increase people's damage, or if the target, if you kill the target, then it does some special effect. So everyone chooses a character to be. They're kind of like comic book characters. You choose one villain and an environment to fight them in, and everybody gets a turn. I mean, the villain deck kind of plays itself, so you turn over a card or multiple cards from the villain deck, and different things happen, and then you turn over a card from the environment deck. You can play the same villain in a different environment, and it is an entirely different game. Lots of different variations and variety to it. It's an excellent kind of just sit down and play for half an hour to an hour and a half, depending on, you know, how many people you're playing with and how difficult the villain is. So it's a lot of fun. It's about $30 or so for like.
How long does each session take?
Anywhere
half hour?
Yeah,
half
it, hour? It can be like half hour to an hour and a half, depending on,
depending on
a few different things. I think the longest one we had was like 2 hours, but we were facing like a difficulty 3 villain. So, you know, the shortest session we had was about an hour. So it can, you know, it kind of varies. And again, how well people know the game, you know, kind of affects that too. So, I mean, it's easy to kind of knock out in a short amount of time. And I have yet to have a bad experience with that game. Like most
cool.
deaf
We've come
dogs.
Dangerously close, but...
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's good. So that's, I mean, that's most of what I played. I hopped on Dark Souls 2 for a little bit just before the podcast to get my fix in and progressing my spellcaster along in there.
Nice. Have you finished it?
I have not. I've still got... My highest level character is in the Undead Purgatory, and I've got to clear through there.
Yeah, while you were away, I actually did... Duquesne of House Duquesne did manage to finish it, so...
Sadness.
Just got to work on the next build, man.
That's right.
I'm ready to go. No, I'm taking a bit of a break, but I'm going to, like we were talking about today, Jason, I'm going to try and get the pretty mods going up on that, so...
Yeah, they looked really good from the trailer that you showed me for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things, too, with, like, I mean, I tweeted this out before I left because it was the last time I had a chance to play, but I hopped on there and I created this new character and I went through, like, the first 4 bosses of the game.
Like, it was nothing.
Yeah, like, in an hour, whereas before it took me, like, 4 or 5 hours to clear to that same point. Such a good feeling with that game when you get to, you know, you're just like, I know what to do here, I know what to do here. Yeah. So, that's what I've been playing.
Cool. Locke, what about you? What have you been playing?
Not too much. I had a Dota tournament over the weekend, which was fun. Just to mention, the prize pool for TI4 is going to hit $6 million this week, which is insane. Again, that's where people are putting money towards their compendiums. Every compendium purchased adds to the prize pool. And
what's insane about that is, to put it in perspective, 75%, how can we word it? That $6 million is 25% of the total money spent towards the
game. Yes, yes.
So times that by 3, and that's how much money Valve has made.
Yep.
Before the tournament.
Before the tournament. Yeah, it's yeah, nuts. And that's people insane. That's people purchasing the compendium, which is $10. And then within the compendium, you can purchase like gems to level it up. And it gets you just more aesthetic stuff. Like you get a different town portal animation and you get a different courier and that sort of thing and battle boosters. So if you want to... I've seen, like, mine's level 4, and that's just by playing the game naturally. I haven't put any money into it. There's guys with, like, a level 27, and then you'll see someone crazy with, like, a level, I don't know, like, a 3-digit one, and you're like, what are you doing? So, yeah, that's interesting to me, mostly because in my real life, it's not that I live two lives, but like when I talk, it's important because I mentioned people, like everyone talks about like football and hockey here, but then I mentioned to them like, well, I'm into this thing where I watch esports and it's legit. Like this actually gives it some, you know, staying power. And I think when you start talking numbers of $6 million for this prize pool for a team of 5 or, you know, more with a manager and sponsors and stuff. But I mean, $6 million isn't, that's nothing to snuff at. So I think,
And first place gets 50% of that. So
yeah.
It's a good chunk of change. I showed my wife it. I was like, you know, have you ever heard of this? And I showed, you know, I was like, guess how much money you think, you know, first place gets in this? And she's like, $10,000.
Yeah.
Like, not even in the same ballpark.
$3 million.
So, you know, I started showing her some of the trailers and some videos and stuff of it. And she's like, wow, this is, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's pretty serious.
And I don't know. It kind of goes further for me because I watch sports and growing up and that sort of thing and throughout university and I've played sports and I liked it, but this is weird. I've started paying attention to players now in this and started to, you know, pay attention to teams and rosters and hero picks and that sort of thing and gameplay styles. Not just because I'm invested in the game. Sorry, what were you gonna say?
I was going to say, are you playing the fantasy
What's up?
Stuff? The fantasy Dota?
Nick, you're muted.
What the heck?
Oh, there you go. There you go.
All right. Sorry. I was asking if you're playing the fantasy Dota.
I was going to. I have to get that ready this week. We got to get a fantasy league going, but you get 10 friends, and it's basically, nerd fantasy football. So,
It's like, that is like the ultimate nerdity.
But I don't know. I really like Dota, and this can be said about other games. Like, not necessarily Call of Duty, because that's sort of a thing on its own, but I don't know what it is, but the International, it feels like one of the most purest sporting events I've ever seen, because I'm a little sick of politics and hockey and salaries and basketball and that sort of thing governing the game, and I like where this is at in terms of a sport. Toss the argument aside whether digital sports are sports or not, but just the level of competition is at such a infant stage, but it is still a high level of play, but it's at such a stage where it's pure. The players are playing for the love of the game, and the money is awesome too, but it's nothing is getting in the way of players playing the game because they like it, and
they're not trying to negotiate salary caps and contracts and stuff like that.
I mean, I'm sure that happens in the background, and you don't see a ton of that yet. And I'm sure that happens no matter what. But at the same time, like, that isn't affecting what the consumers see, and that isn't what people are reporting on. Depending on how it goes in the next, 5-10 years, like, that might change. And it's like, oh, there's a salary cap on Dota teams now, but I just like where it's at. It's so pure. You can hop on online, whether it's on Twitch or through the client, and you can pick your favorite broadcaster. And I just think it's a really cool system. And I never, you would have asked me 5 years ago, I wouldn't have ever thought I would be into this, but it's just interesting to me because, I miss watching sports. I like catching, soccer when I'm at a bar or a pub or something. And I like, I like watching playoff hockey and basketball, but it's just like in the back of my mind, it's always like, these guys are making so much money, it doesn't even matter anymore. And that's easy for me to say. I know there's guys that are playing professional sports and I would, of course, the majority of it, they're just like, yeah, I love this game and they're super passionate about it. But I like how raw Dota is right now. I like how it's about the game and it's not about the money yet. So that's kind of what I've been paying attention to. I played this game called Arena, which is spelt weird. It's AERENA, and it stands for like Ether Arena. It's a free to play game that just came out. It's been in beta for a while. And I put some money towards it, so I was able to unlock a hero. Basically, think of a tabletop game, Warhammer, but it's a grid-based, turn-based strategy game, and you get to pick a roster of 5 heroes, and each of the heroes has 2 special abilities, different attack, different hit points, that sort of thing. HeroClix. Do you guys know what HeroClix are?
Yeah.
Yep.
It reminds me of HeroClix a lot, but the theme is steampunk, but they call it etherpunk. So everything is governed by this ether.
So there's
this
blue flame everywhere.
Yeah, blue flame everywhere, and it's governed by this power source. And anyways, you pick your roster of 5, and you and there's small stages like 8x8 grids, maybe 10x10 grids, and there's different like bonus things on or bonus spots on the grid. Ones that'll kill you, ones that'll heal you, that sort of thing. And the object is to destroy your other guy's ship. Anytime you kill one of his heroes, he takes damage, or you can attack the ship directly. It's cool. It's a really neat game. It's nice and quick. Matches are between 5 and 10 minutes. There's a pretty good amount of strategy to it, especially when you are using the environment to your advantage, that sort of thing. You want some characters are better at zoning and sort of playing the long game. Some are more aggressive, so on and so forth. It's definitely worth checking out. They don't have the ability to do custom matches yet, so you're always playing against randoms. So that was a little disappointed. I wanted to record something for it, but I wasn't able to play against a friend yet. But that is coming. The business model is they have a hero rotation like League of Legends does, where you have 3 heroes that you can play no matter what, and that rotates every week. And then the If you put money towards it, you can use in-game currency, or you can use real-life bucks to buy extra heroes. And I think there's a pretty good roster. I think there's, like, I want to say 10 heroes right now, which is pretty good if you're only using three at a time. So, yeah, it's called Arena, A-E-R-E-N-A, worth a download and checking out. It's pretty cool. It's a fun turn-based strategy game, more, you know, in the vein of a board game style, sort of quick pick-up-and-play versus match thing.
Is that on Steam?
That is on Steam, yeah. That was just, okay. It was released about, or out of beta, couple weeks ago, I think, maybe even last week.
It's interesting that you bring up HeroClix and think about things like Magic the Gathering, how that's gone to a video game style. Mm-hmm. How you really don't see that. Like, I mean, I would think that HeroClix would be a great thing for Marvel or someone to make some money off of, sell booster packs of characters and stuff.
Totally. Well, I see stuff like Talisman coming to Steam, and I'm like, oh, that's awesome. But then when you have something that has, you know, more physical things like the HeroClix little figurines, and that's what the heroes are. They're basically little figurines. They're just not mounted to anything. And you look at the toy to life thing with the Skylanders and Disney Infinity, right?
Yeah.
This just removes the buying the actual toys thing. You're just buying a digital figure. So.
Well, what was the CCG that Sony put out? Like, Path of Judgment or something like that.
Yeah.
I have Judgment.
Where you have that card.
But that was the you know, the toy to life version of Magic the Gathering, and it just didn't take off. So the experiment has been tried.
Totally.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time to give it another shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what they do in terms of features. I'm really curious to see what kind of revenue they get. I mean, I was only able to purchase one hero, and it would take a long time to sweat it out and grind it out to get all of them. So I don't know. I didn't look at too closely in terms of what you could put in, but I think there was like a $99 option, and I was like, I'm not putting.
There's always a $100 option.
Yeah, I'm not paying $100 to get those things. So that's kind of where the free to play sort of rubs me the wrong way. Is like, I'd rather give you $30 and have everything instead of this weird system where I'm putting in like $10 a pop to get this hero and that sort of thing. I don't know. It's weird. Mm-hmm. It's totally, it's maybe hypocritical or something, but I look at Dota. I'm like, my Dota fund this week for treasure chests is $10. So I give myself an allowance. And then on this other side, it's like, yeah, there's this kind of weird free-to-play game that, you know, doesn't give you access to everything. I think it's the thing where it doesn't give you access to everything. I think that's what bothers me. I think that's what bothers me of League of Legends as well, is you don't have access to everything. Whereas Dota, you have access to everything, but it's just cosmetics. Because I firmly believe in a free-to-play world or a free-to-play game that everyone should be on a level playing field. And I don't like when that's disrupted by money or there's a gate to money there. Yeah. So. But that's about it for me. For some reason, I went back to StarCraft 2 and started playing the campaign because I didn't finish, but that's whatever.
All right. Mike, what about you? You've got a new toy in your home, don't you?
Yeah, I bought a PS4 a few weeks ago.
Nice.
So I've been playing, you know, I bought Infamous with it, which is actually really fun. It's a good kind of play for a half hour, blow a bunch of shit up game. It's pretty impressive visually, but the game I played the most on it so far is actually Child of Light, since I reviewed it, which is a interesting use of the Ubi art framework, which is what powered Rayman Legends and Origins. Honestly, it's like any children's fairy tale. Like, you read a children's book, and that is about what Child of Light is like. It has a Grandia-inspired JRPG combat, which I enjoyed greatly, because Grandia has my favorite combat system of any JRPG, so I was really digging it in Child of Light, even though it's actually quite broken later on. It's very easy to exploit with a couple characters and a setup. So I played that, reviewed it. Reviews on the site. It's pretty awesome. Just the co-op's not mega awesome. Been playing a lot of Diablo 3. Played about 20 or 30 hours of Elder Scrolls Online, so I could do the MMO co-opportunities article about that. And someone promptly copied and pasted a spam campaign against the billing system in the game, which I guess has a problem right now, but I wouldn't know. So I actually kind of 180'd on that. I think that game's actually pretty good. It just doesn't put its best foot forward early on. It's like early on you get a lot of like the go kill, you know, kill 10 mud crabs and bring me their corpses type stuff. Yep. And eventually the quests become more what you're used to in an Elder Scrolls game, where it's like, go explore this place and see this thing and then come back and talk to me, or, you know, go resolve this dispute and you actually get to make some, you know, decisions along the way.
Cool. I need to start that. A guild that is set out to kill all players who attack mud crabs and stop the persecution.
Yes. I'm going to call it the Azure Guardians.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's pretty neat. Unlike other MMOs, this one is, like, the class you pick really doesn't define as much as you think, because each class has access to, I think, 30, close to 30 skill trees.
Oh, yeah.
And that you can put points into. And the class you choose changes three of them. But, you know, if you really, like, if you don't ever, you don't ever have to put skill points into your actual class, you can just be like, I want to use a two-handed sword, and there's a two-handed sword tree that is filled with abilities. And then all I really want to do is be a blacksmith. So you can just put the rest of your skill points into, like, crafting and stuff. And the game is pretty flexible and lets you do stuff like that, which is kind of neat. You'll cripple yourself in terms of combat if you do something like that, but it's cool that they give you the option. I like the fact that the max party size is 4 players. It means it's a lot easier to get a group together, and it also means everybody's role is a little more important, even the DPS, because, you know, in Elder Scrolls games, there's, like, the Fighters Guild, the Mages Guild. There's a guild in Elder Scrolls Online called the Undaunted, which is, they're basically like, we like exploring dungeons with friends. Will you join us, fair adventurer? And they give you an entire skill tree that is nothing but combo abilities with other players. So, you know, the first one you get is... Was that?
Do you praise the sun after?
Yes.
You praise the light.
close enough, right?
it's like one of the abilities they have is called Blood Funnel, which, you know, if someone uses it, it drops a little altar in the middle of combat, and everybody in the party can go up and activate it. And it gives everybody a heal over time, but the number of people that click on it increases the power of the ability. So there's a lot of nice stuff like that. So I quite enjoyed it. I'll probably play a little more before, you know, Wildstar drops and I need to shift my attention.
What are you going to do about Wildstar, man?
What's that?
What are you going to do about Wildstar? Are you planning on subscribing or checking out for a month?
I'll probably check out for a month and go from there.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of my my game with MMOs. I haven't had one stick with me for more than a couple months.
Yeah,
yet, no, that's so fair. I try to not pay too much money into them unless it's a free to play game. Speaking of salary caps and contract negotiations, I've actually been playing a lot of FIFA 14.
Nice. On PS4?
On the PS4, yeah. Nick and I actually next week are going to stream us playing the co-op season mode.
Can I commentate?
Sure. Why not? It's a co-op season, but the season's mode is PvP. So, like, Nick and I will be on the same team, but we are also playing against other people who are going to be on the same team, so it's like 2v2.
Well, this is on the PS4, right? So it has the whole over the shoulder thing, so yeah, Locke and I can, like, sit there and watch you guys and shout at you to do things.
That's true. Hey, pass that ball.
Pass it. Why don't you score a goal? Why'd you do that? Why don't you just put the ball in the goal? I mean, come on.
It's one of those games where it's like super. I have not played it online yet because I'm terrified of playing online. Since it's the type of like, there are people that all they do is play FIFA, and they are really, really, really fucking serious about it. And I'm deathly afraid that Nick and I will drop in and we'll barely be able to complete passes to one another. and we're going to go up against some like Johnny Soccer Hooligan from the UK that just clowns us. Just
Johnny Soccer.
Just spam your flop button. Just spam that flop button.
Yeah, so I've been playing a lot of that. It's pretty fun.
Nice.
And that's really it.
Yeah, so I haven't been playing much. Dota 2, I've been trying to play like one match a day. I did pick up the compendium stuff and kind of dabbling in that, trying to learn it a little bit more. I finally figured out how to get surround sound out of my HDMI port on my computer instead of running a giant optical cable across the thing. And so Battlefield 4 is like my go-to test audio configuration stuff, so I ended up playing a bunch of that this weekend. And then I installed Neverwinter. It's a free-to-play MMO from Cryptic. And I guess it's been out a couple years now, hasn't it?
It's been out about a year. They just announced the first expansion for it.
And it's pretty interesting. I've only put maybe 2 or 3 hours. I just hit level 10. But it's very action oriented. There's a ton of player content now. Actually got to the point where when you log in, I guess players can create quests and stuff like that, and then they get ranked and voted on, and you can jump into those stories and stuff. I did my first dungeon or whatever you want to call it today, where you basically
skirmish.
Thank you. Yeah. And you do kind of look for a group for that. So it was kind of like a horde survival mode kind of a thing with a big boss at the end.
Yeah, I actually reinstalled that so I can pop in and play with you. I didn't know that Perfect World had completely folded it over into a different subsidiary, because I tried to log in and it's like, hey, you need this account with this other company now.
Oh.
So.
But yeah, it's pretty fun. Like, I don't know where I see where there's all the options to buy stuff for it, but
it's all in the Zen market.
Yeah, I like the combat. It feels very actiony.
Then you will like WildStar.
Yeah, I mean, someone compared it to kind of like Guild Wars, and it definitely kind of has the Guild Wars feel in terms of combat. It's a little more twitch based for some of the stuff. Obviously, it's still just doing numbers behind the scenes, but pretty fun. So it's pretty too. There's lots of pretty stuff.
It also has the Fable breadcrumb sparklies.
Oh, yes, nice. It does. Yeah. Let's jump into some news. There's a bunch of news to talk about since we haven't podcast in, almost been a month now, I think.
Terrible.
And so since it's been a while, there's a game that's we've been waiting for a co-op mode for a while for, and that's Killzone. Jason's going to tell us about that. It's finally getting its co-op mode.
Yeah, you sent me that game. What it was like December,
yeah, a long time ago,
and it's actually like still in its shrink wrap packaging or whatever from when you sent it to me, because you sent it to me just like as soon as the co-op mode comes out, we're gonna be playing this. I was like, okay, yep. January, February, March, April, May. Oh, hey, look, now the co-op mode's finally gonna come out. It's called Intercept. It's 4-player online. It's gonna be free for anyone who's season pass holders. Basically, it seems to be kind of like a squad-based tactical. So you take the role of the intelligence squad alpha members, and you have to intercept Hellgas intelligence and direct it back to, you know, your alliance people. You get rewards for working together, and there's 4 main combat roles: the assault, the marksman, medic, and tactician. 4 maps, but there's not much else, I think, at this point, really, that's been revealed about it. Just kind of some of those bare bones of how many people can play and the fact that it uses squads. So hopefully it still comes out in June.
Yeah, they're saying June. Yeah, kind of crazy. It's 7 months after release. You know, it's going to be interesting to see if the user base is still there.
If anyone's still going to be interested in going back to a game to play it for that.
I mean, yeah. There's another game getting a co-op mode, and this one was kind of a surprise, and that's Don't Starve. Locke, why don't you tell us about that?
Don't Starve is interesting, and I'm actually surprised. I'm surprised a little bit, and I'm not, but paint you a little picture of what it is. Think a survival game, sort of building everything from scratch in a sandbox world, a la Minecraft or Terraria, Starforge? No, not
Starbound.
Starbound, thank you. Except if Tim Burton had done all the artwork. And it is actually my favorite game of that sort of style. I just like the atmosphere of it.
It's real fun.
And it's got a weird, weird, eerie feeling to it. Like, if you don't have a campfire at night, the creatures will just kill you if you don't have a light source, and you slowly go insane. There's an insanity meter, so that's kind of funny too. And the world changes based on your insanity or your sanity level. You'll start to see things, and things will appear. And I've been playing it since it was available on Steam in I don't think there was an alpha, but beta. Anyways,
it's over a year.
Yeah, over a year now, and It's really good, and putting multiplayer into that, I think, will just, it'll be great, because there is so much to do, and because the world is different every time you play, and it has that roguelike element of if you die, you lose everything and you have to start over, but you still, like, you gain the knowledge of what you unlocked previously. So I'm curious to see, because it'd be fun to just hop in with, you know, 2 to 4 friends and sort of make this sort of campsite, I've played a lot of it, but I still have not discovered everything. Like, there's things in there that I don't know how to get, and I think that element of mystery in Don't Starve is so apparent, which I think it'd be fun to discover with friends, where you wander, you know, to a big part of an island and you see this idol, and then someone activates it and you go to this different part of the island, and then they've added like tunnels and the DLC. I actually purchased the DLC, and they've added a bunch of new stuff. So new creatures, new things, lots to discover. They've been doing a lot of good work on that. And again, from, you know, one of my favorite developers, Clay, Don't Starve multiplayer. Definitely looking forward to that, because it's scary by yourself.
Cool. Mike, what can you tell us about a new Skylanders game?
I could tell you I was totally surprised that they're putting a new Skylanders game out.
I can see the shock on your face.
So Skylanders, the new game called Trap Team, includes a new portable power, and the twist last time was Swap Force, so the figures would come apart. You could mix and match them and create new characters that had like combo abilities. The twist this time is that the portal is now like, you know, it's like Ghostbusters. You know, you fight a bad guy, you weaken him, and then you jam a crystal into a slot on the new portal power, and it takes the bad guy and puts him into the crystal, and then you can then use him as a good guy.
Really?
And, yeah.
So the kids are going to eat it up, because it literally like puts the voice of the character into the little crystal thing, and so when you take it out, he's like talking like he's inside the crystal. So yeah,
that's really cool.
Yeah, it seems really neat. Yeah, those games are something I've always been meaning to try, but I'm not willing to spend more than, you know, the price of admission to play, and the real meat of that is buying a bunch of figures. So
yeah,
really nice thing. I know every adult I know that's gotten into that has spent $400
on
like,
I have everyone, every
figures.
Series. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, Nick, why don't you show us your
let's see your so toys, you Nick. That.
I was going back through
this
tweets.
Big bag is filled with Skylanders.
See, I have a friend who buys two of each, one to play with and one to have in package. And
yeah, I have a friend who does that too.
I'm just like, oh my god.
But the really nice thing about them, and there's a good article in the latest Game Informer with Toys for Bob, it's an interview with them, talking about how all of the figures are all backwards compatible. Because the article brings up, when are you going to start retiring the figures and stuff? Because what they're starting to do now is bring in alternate versions of them, essentially, like different poses and stuff like that. But they said that's kind of how they're getting around not retiring them and keep making sure the figures are all backwards compatible and stuff. So, you know, you can have a Skylander from the very first game, and, you know, maybe you always had a stupid pot on his head or whatever, right, that you unlocked. You bring it into this new one. I mean, as soon as you place him in that portal and he jumps in the game, he's going to have that stupid pot on his head.
Yeah.
The same way. So it's pretty cool. You know, I guess this is the fourth? Yeah, fourth game.
My favorite thing about the Skylanders game has nothing necessarily to do with the game, but going back through, like, old tweets, and Andrew, who used to write for the site, wrote a tweet one time who's like, just dropped $50 on Skylanders figures and about to open them at home. The sexual tension between me and my wife is palpable. I mean, it was just like...
Yeah, and it's true. I mean, when you pull out a legendary Chop Chop, you know business is about to go.
That's right.
Down.
That's right.
You know it is on.
Our last big story, Halo 5 has gotten a title. It's called Halo 5 Guardians. The big shock, the news, maybe not so much a shock, it's not coming out in 2014. It'll be out in 2015, fall of 2015, actually.
I've got another piece of news, too.
Okay. Well, there's a bunch of stuff we got to talk.
I think this one's pretty important.
Okay. Let me wrap this up. But yeah, so people are kind of disappointed, but the rumor mill is churning, and it looks like there's going to be, it's called Halo the Master Chief something, anthology, essentially. And you're getting Halo 1 through 4 coming to Xbox One with HD graphics. Lots of, I guess the multiplayer engine will be based on Halo 2, and it's going to have all of the maps from all the Halo games essentially playable in it.
That's a lot of maps.
Yeah, it's... And again, this is all rumor and speculation kind of a thing, but I've seen some supposedly stuff. We'll see. But yeah, so you're going to have to wait another year plus for your new Halo fix. The big news with the Halo 5 announcement was the key art they released. Master Chief isn't the... one on top. there's another Spartan that's the focal point, and Master Chief is a reflection or reflected position of
Mirage, isn't it?
Yeah. But the only thing that's been confirmed is that it is another character. So.
It's not Master Chief 2.0.
It's not like Master Chief in different armor
or
something. So, I don't know. It should be kind of interesting. I'm sure we'll see more at E3 in a couple weeks. But that's a ways off. So, Mike, what is your big story that just can't wait?
So, how about Microsoft dropping the Kinect from
Xbox One? Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah, that happened.
As a requirement and in, you know, so Microsoft said, you know, Sony is actually eating our lunch because their console costs $100 less and everyone hates Kinect. So they finally wised up and yanked Kinect out of the box and are selling it for 400 bones. Starting, what, next month or later this month?
Next month.
Yeah, so
it's up for pre-order.
That's interesting.
So around E3, you can get a Kinectless Xbox One, as God intended it.
I've seen some speculation on that, and as much as they likely did it for the PR positivity of it, they were saying that the speculation was part of it also has to do, like, Xbox isn't out in Japan yet, or China as well, and they think that it might have been removing it because of the language barrier and the amount of effort it would take to make it compatible with all the different dialects and things like that in those regions. And so they wanted to make a Kinectless SKU just for so they could put it out there.
So why not start with that, then work your way towards the Kinect version? That's
Because well, the idea is that nobody will develop for Kinect if everybody doesn't have it.
I mean, there's a total reboot going on over there since Matrix got booted out, and you know, a total philosophy change of what was being driven.
I guess. I mean, if no one has herpes, then you're no point in researching a cure for it. So yeah, I mean, hey, that works. That's good logic.
I don't follow.
It's awkward.
Yeah, I don't follow at all.
If you're not going to develop for something if it doesn't exist, right? So if you're not going to have the Kinect as part of the launch console, you're not going to develop Kinect games for it. So if you don't have it there from the initial get-go to force people to do something with it, and you try to introduce it later on, people aren't
right. Well, that's exactly why they did have it there, because
they wanted it to be the baseline. Whereas last gen, they released the Kinect as a peripheral, and it sold gangbusters, and then nobody bought any of the games other than Dance Central. Yeah. So everyone stopped developing for it, especially when they realized how unreliable it could be. And the Kinect 2 in the Xbox One is vastly improved, but at this point, everyone just stopped caring.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
It's definitely a case of... I think the gaming industry in general has this really bad affliction with mob mentality. I mean, the YouTube Twitch thing from yesterday. Like, people were like, oh my god, it's the end of Twitch. Before, like, anything... Any
That's
details
over
or anything,
a rumor.
It's not even a confirmed thing. It was a rumor, but it's like Google ruined YouTube, and basically they're complaining because of the comment system and how it was changed when Google decided to integrate Google Plus with YouTube.
To be fair, Google
Plus is the
basis
of all of their arguments and all this stuff. And it's really, it's just there's so
I can't have my
much...
incredibly homophobic racist comment be the top one.
How am I
going to
call someone a faggot if they have to see my real name? Like, get out of here.
Yeah. So let's go through a bunch of quick news bits. Diablo 3 Ultimate Evil Edition coming to Xbox One, PS3, Xbox 360, and PS4, I guess, too?
PS4, yep.
Yeah, probably, PS4. Yeah. That will have Diablo 3 plus the expansion pack. And that is coming in August for all of those.
Nice. Best feature? Porting your characters over.
Yes.
Yes.
From what?
Yeah.
From what?
From the previous
from anything.
Version.
Oh, from anything?
Not from any... You can't translate your BattleNet characters over.
Oh, no. I was going to be like... I would definitely get it on
previous gen to next gen.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's good.
Dying Light, the Techland zombie game. Outside of the Dead Island universe.
It's zombie parkour.
Yeah, zombie parkour. It's 2015 is now the release date for that, so that got pushed.
Shit!
Yeah, but we will be seeing that at E3, so see how that
you know,
goes.
You know what else got delayed?
A bunch of
The
delayed.
Division.
Yes, The Division. I'm still not convinced that that's really a co-op game.
What? Remind me what that is again?
It's the new Tom Clancy shooter.
Yeah, it's like MMO-ish kind of a thing going on. Killing Floor 2, a wildly popular PC co-op game. It's been around now for, I think, 5 years. Just
game,
had its birthday.
Game is dope.
Yeah, it is.
Sequel is announced, and I got to bring it up. It's harkening back to the old days of PC gaming when every feature in a game, and EA still does it with their sports games, but a feature gets an awesome acronym. It's the new gore system in this. It's called MEAT. It stands for Massive Evisceration and Trauma. And
their quote was like, they said they wanted more. They wanted to do gore better than like what's the really gory one that came out like a decade ago? Where they
yeah, that's what I'm trying to think
honor.
Of. Soldier of Fortune.
Soldier of Fortune. Soldier of Fortune.
Yep. Yeah, Soldier of Fortune had one too.
Yeah, we're like, we need to do gore better than Soldier of Fortune.
So yeah, that's good news there. It's going to have co-op, that'll be out. No, it doesn't say. We don't have a date on that.
There wasn't a date, just an announcement.
Yeah. Our editorial series has been continuing, and the staff is doing a kick-ass job of coming up with those things. Chris put out one about what games influenced your love of co-op, and maybe we'll go real quick through ours here. Locke, what's a good game that influenced your love of playing co-op?
I've got Gauntlet, Double Dragon, and Little Ninja Brothers. And nice. Battletoads.
Battletoads, I thought, killed everybody's love of anything.
No, man.
Yeah. No, man. Battletoads is great.
There is a rumor, Locke,
that Rare is going to be announcing a new Battletoads game at
E3. Oh, I'd shit my pants.
What, after they're done laying off employees?
Yeah.
Oh.
The thing about Battletoads is, like, if you can make it to the speed bikes with me, that's cool. But then, if you can't make it past the speed bikes, you're out. But if you make it past the speed bikes with me, we're friends forever. So that's how it works.
So Locke, can you beatbox the pause sound?
I think that's how it goes.
No.
I gotta look it up now. Continue your conversation. Okay, go for it. There. Oh yeah, on the off. Good one. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah,
thank you.
No, I actually just played Battletoads a week ago with a buddy, so...
Oh, that's no fair.
I'm cheating.
The first thing it fills in when I search it is Battletoads pause music.
Of course, because it's the best part of that game. The best part of that game is the last boss on the first level.
Yeah.
And then the pause music.
So did you and your friend clear the speed bikes?
Fuck no.
All right, then you're not friends for life.
No, well, we're not friends for life, but we did enjoy cutting each other's ropes with swords in the stupid drop zone thing.
Yeah, the descent.
No, you got to hit him with the wrecking ball move.
Oh,
like,
we did. We do that, and then we cut each other's lifeline with the swords that drop from the birds.
Nice.
There's a lot going on in that game that it's pretty advanced. Anyway.
All right, Jason, what games influence your love for co-op?
Secret of Mana and Final Fantasy 3. I remember playing with Mike and others. What?
Fucking RPGs.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What about you?
So, actually, all my stuff's been covered, but I actually responded to the article with the reasoning behind mine. So, the first co-op game I ever played was Gauntlet. That gave me the taste, planted the seed, and then I moved from there to Contra, NES Contra, and the last piece of the puzzle was Secret of Mana, and any of the Squaresoft RPGs that allowed a second player to plug in cool. on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, for me it'd probably be Streets of Rage 2.
Nice, yeah, good pick.
Raiden 2. Smash TV
2.
Those kind of no 2 there.
No.
Ironically, I think some of the games that I've had the most fun in co-op are ones that weren't really co-op. Like Phantasy Star 2, I basically played co-op with a buddy all the way through. We just pass the controller kind of a thing back and forth. Someone on the map. So
that's how that's how we played a lot of games.
Civilization, hot seat basically.
That's how Jason and I played Silent Hill 2.
Hill 2.
I actually co-opted Silent Hill 2 with a buddy because we were too scared at certain parts. So we'd be like, your turn.
Well, ours was more like, this game's really interesting, but it's kind of a chore to play. So you take over for a while.
Yeah. That was probably what it was. I just shaded it in fear, but
it's always good stuff. And then Jason put out an editorial with ex-staffer Kat Pawlowski and called the social impacts of co-op gaming, and it was actually based on a talk from GDC
yep,
yeah.
This year, and there's a ton of material. I mean, Kat and I are even still talking about some of this, but the basic gist of the talk was for game developers is just they need to work a little bit more on what they portray towards male gamers, right? Particularly teenage boys, because they reinforce certain alpha male kind of characteristics for how they're, socially defined. And one of the people, Rosalind, had this whole thing that she defined as the box, and everything outside the box was, what people were trying to avoid. And you see video game characters that portray this, in Grand Theft Auto and Halo and all this other kind of stuff. But then you have the key word in there for us was the incentivized co-op. So, you know, if you have a co-op gaming experience that, you know, truly engenders a cooperative nature, cooperative fun, you get people playing together and actually working together and socializing, and they can kind of see that asking for help or working with others is a good thing, and it's not something that's forced upon you or just like a, man, I have to do this now, I have to open up a buddy door, come on, man, you know, catch up with me and stuff. The best example for that they have for this that I think still holds true is Dark Souls, because co-op in that game, everybody gets something out of it. It's entirely optional. You don't have to do it if you don't want to. And it just makes the play experience better. Like, you don't really have... you don't have that much of a chance to grief players. I mean, you probably can, but, you know, really it's not intended for that. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other good co-op experiences. And we talk about that some as well, and how the Co-Optimus database is kind of like a good source for that. So, I mean, there's tons of stuff there, too. I think it's a interesting thing to look at the psychology and sociology of gamers and how particularly video games impact a lot of things and are reflections of general society and norms. I mean, that's one of the bigger things I kind of took away from the whole thing, was that Ashley Birch, who was part of the thing, was just kind of like, we all know that racists and, you know, people making these kind of remarks don't just come out of nowhere. Like, we all kind of accept the fact that this behavior is taught and, or, you know, to some degree mimicked. So, you know, video games, for as much as people want to say video games are to blame, they're more of a reflection of stuff that's already in our society than a root cause. So, lots of good stuff there. And the talk itself is, like, yeah, well worth going through and watching. We have a link up on the video, or for the article itself, to take a look at.
Cool. Yeah, so lots of good content on the site. Be sure to check it out.
I think I'm next week.
Are you next
week? Oh, God.
You don't know what you're doing yet?
Cooperative poops.
That's not even the thing. Yet.
Not yet.
Clearly not yet. You're not doing it right.
That's right. I'm reminded of the old Saturday Night Live sketch, like the his and her toilets, where they're like sitting there gazing at each other.
No, it's a tender moment.
Yeah.
I know we discussed about why I was going to go on a tirade about why Dark Souls doesn't need co-op lobbies, but I think that's kind of been done to death in terms of discussion, so I'll think of something. Think of something right. Good.
We had not one but two voicemails over the past couple weeks.
What?
They were both from our buddy Ray in Philadelphia.
Roy.
Damn it.
Roy. I went back Roy and re-listened. So sorry, Roy.
Hey guys, this is Roy from Philly calling. I was just listening to the latest Co-op the Cast, and you guys just didn't have a voicemail. I did leave a voicemail, maybe they got lost, but I'll just say the same voice, the question I had again. My question was around mods and consoles. So, you know, generally, consoles don't allow mods from users. I'm just wondering if that would be something that you would like to see. You know, something, I think Steam Workshop or Steam allows, the way they do mods or whatever. I was just, you know, so I'm playing through a Thief, which is okay. It got not great reviews, but I'm actually enjoying myself. So I was like, man, they could update it and fix it, but like, what if users decided, like, oh, let's mod this and make it better, let's make it prettier, let's fix the loads. I don't know what they can do crazy stuff. But are mods something you would like to see on consoles, or do you just want to leave those to PCs? Great podcast. Keep it up. Thanks. Hey guys, this is Rory from Philly with another question. How are you guys doing? So I just started playing Child of Light, which I'm actually really enjoying. I'm not a big JRPG fan, don't really like them, don't like random encounters, don't like turn-based games, but I thought I would give this a try, really because of Rayman Origins and that UbiArt framework looks fantastic. So I thought I would give this a try, and found myself really, really enjoying it. And it's kind of like RPG light, but I'm really enjoying it. And, you know, they have kind of a co-op, I guess, governed mode where the other person can control the Firefly. I was thinking, I was playing on the battles, and any time you have two characters fighting on your side, and the other guys may have three characters, whatever. So I thought, wouldn't it be cool if that part was co-op also, where I control one guy and my friend controls the other guy, and we can kind of talk to each other and kind of try to sync up moves. I don't know. I don't play JRPGs. I don't know if that's too much. I just thought what you guys would think of that in Shadow Light. Or maybe like a Final Fantasy game where, you know, the battles, if you have multiple characters on the screen, well, other people could control the other characters. So what do you think? Thanks.
You know, do you guys think we'll ever see consoles that offer the freedom to mod a game like you can on the PC? We were talking earlier about, I guess, Dark Souls 2 on the PC has some graphic enhancements that you can do.
Well, I guess how are you defining console here? Because I could argue that kind of stuff already exists for shit like the Ouya.
User-created levels and stuff like that, but I would say outside of a toolkit would be considered a mod, right?
Yeah, I would go ahead and say no. I think there was some buzz. Oh, jeez. I'm trying to remember. I think last gen with when Unreal Tournament 3 was coming out, there was some pre-release talk about like letting PC modders port over to the PS3 version. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anything ever came of that. I think the closest thing you might see happen is you get like Elder Scrolls, WoW, or any other MMO, like a lot of those get mods developed for them. And in the case of World of Warcraft, Blizzard generally took whatever the popular mods were and ended up rolling the feature set of those into the game over the course of time. So I feel like player mods on the PC side might influence the
future
console
updates,
games.
Yeah.
But I don't think you're going to see a true player-written code pushed out, because it's just too much of a liability. And with, yeah, you can self-publish on these platforms now, but those stores like PSN and Xbox Marketplace or whatever they're calling it these days, like those are walled gardens, same as like Apple's iOS App Store, and everybody can't just publish to that. And since the future of gaming is really going to be kind of that, curated walled garden / software as a service platform that things are going the way things are going now, I don't see it happening. I don't see there's a method for people to slot that kind of stuff onto a console where they would likely just get banned if they were able to do it. With something like, say, the Amazon Firebox or whatever they call that thing, the Ouya and the various Android set-top boxes, you might see some traction there if any of those actually takes off on as a broad device to support. But that really hasn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. So I am skeptical. But as far as a Nintendo / Sony / Microsoft developed box, it's not going to happen.
We'll never see the Game Genie again.
That'd be so sick.
I actually have a Game Genie book for Cheat Code Hotline today.
We'll drop one of those later. But yeah, I agree. I think the console publishers and creators, they've had having a hard enough time as it is for just adopting some of the indie stuff, that, and that's more of a, like you said, curated kind of a thing.
Yeah.
The problem with consoles is it is a closed system, and they do have security and anti-piracy kind of stuff built into them that most times that if they are user-modded in some way, it's just not going to work.
Not to mention, like, the whole accreditation process or license, like, bug check process for even patches for a game. I mean, like, that have to go through.
Yeah. I mean, if you want mods, you want to be on the PC.
I was trying to even think of something like Shadowrun Returns, right? They have a whole little system map generator. You can build your own little quests and stuff like that. I mean, even placing a tool like that in the consoles, I mean, you could do it for yourself.
There's been games that have had map editors and things like that before, but it's all within the closed ecosystem of itself.
Right, right. So, like, for yourself, you could do it, but, I mean, if you put that up online, I mean, are you charging for it? Is it free? Is it downloadable content that goes through their service? And in which case, do they have to sit there and have to filter, have some system now to filter through the millions of stuff that they, I mean...
Well, I mean, you look at, like, okay, Halo, right? They it had its content creation kind of stuff built in, and it was not a curated kind of a thing. It was community moderated. Forza is another good example of all of the skins and stuff. And actually, that's become a premium service now that users can sell their the stuff that they've made for the cars and the tuners and stuff like that back to the community. But again, it's with tools that are built into the game itself. I don't consider that really a mod. It's just content creation.
Yeah.
A mod is, like, taking something and breaking... I don't want to say breaking it, but...
And Doom 2...
Changing the way it's intended to be displayed or used or experienced.
I remember downloading back in the day mods for Doom 2 that would, like... put all the Simpson character voices for demons. I mean, there's tons of them. Yeah.
They had Star Wars ones, Aliens ones.
Yeah, the Aliens Total Conversion was the famous one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For Doom, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you'll ever see kind of stuff like that, because what happens on the console, when those kind of character things pop up, there's always licensing issues. And
yeah.
Who gets blamed? But whose responsibility is that and stuff? And, the publishers and stuff try and skirt around it as much as possible, and just basically the safest thing for them to do is avoid it and just take it down.
Boo! No fun.
So our second voicemail, this is the Mike voicemail, we'll call it. It's from our boy Roy again. He was playing Child of Light, and he enjoyed it quite a bit, especially the JRPG aspect, but he was a little bit disappointed with the co-op
that
he found in it. So I guess, he wanted to know about some other good JRPG co-op games where he could get his fix.
Final Fantasy 2 and 3 on the Super Nintendo both supported the ability to plug a second controller in, and everybody would just alternate through the turn order.
There's got to be something, a little more action.
The first and third characters were on controller 1. And the second and fourth were on controller 2, and you'd play co-op that way. Jason and I did that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Back in the day, obviously, Secret of Mana, Seika Densetsu 3.
Weeaboo.
I actually have a copy of that game sitting about 3 feet from me. So, what does that make me, Locke?
Where's your samurai swords, Mike?
My Wakabashi.
They are being reforged, but I can go get my Dragon Ball Z button-up T-shirt if you like.
Please wear your shame tarp.
Two
World. Hey, there was two Worlds 2. Was that co-op?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's fun.
Yeah, but that's not a JRPG.
That's a Western RPG.
Yeah, his question is specifically JRPGs or JRPG style games.
Well, so. I'm more into the GRPGs. it's more of a niche market.
Anyway, I can't think of any recent ones that actually had true co-op. Child of Light, I feel they missed something. They gave you kind of the little brother mode with Ignatius or Igniculus or whatever, however you pronounce his name. Where that player 2 could, you know, heal, you know, you could give like a little heal over time or stun enemies along the timeline in combat. But eventually all of the characters, if you build them correctly, are able to do most of those things on their own without assistance. Like there's a pair of characters that you can put a stun rune on, or Oculus or whatever they called the items in that game. You could build a character so that they hit every enemy on screen and either stun them or knock them back 75% of the way on the timeline, which basically negates Igniculus's abilities. So I found myself towards the end of the game wishing that, like, if you played it in co-op, it would give you the option of just letting one player control the primary character and the other controlling the secondary character, but I don't know.
There is a game we streamed on here a couple weeks back.
Oh, Grindy? Grindia.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's. I guess you would call that a JRPG. It's very similar to Wanderlust.
JRPG inspired for sure.
Yeah, kind of top-down Zelda-ish RPG. Those are pretty good. Obviously, most of the co-op RPGs are going to be like your Gauntlets, like Gauntlet Dark Legacy, the Diablo games, Titan Quest, Torchlight. Things of that nature.
The Tales games from like recent, like Tales of.
Yeah, a few of those have some similar co-op to the Final Fantasy games.
And funny enough, if you do a Google search of co-op JRPG, the third hit is her article talking about those games.
Oh yeah. Nice.
That is right. I think Tales of Symphonia was the last one of those I played and. On the GameCube, and I don't remember if it had co-op, but I think the new re-release did.
Yeah.
So
they're very few and far between now on the JRPG side of things. Squaresoft themselves, for all the recent ones, have gone way, way into the single player.
Fantasy 14.
those are like their MMOs, aside from their MMOs that they've released.
Was Last Remnant co-op?
I never played it, so I
I'm
trying to think. I know I played it, but I don't remember it having.
I might have bought it for $1 on a Steam sale once, but I've never played it.
I think
it.
We all bought it for $1.
Last Revenant or Last Remnant?
Fuck.
Last Remnant.
The Squaresoft one.
Yeah, Last Remnant.
Their Unreal Engine game.
No, it did not. At least
Shit, this box is heavy. How many discs are in here?
According to, a database that is a really good source on this.
Yeah. One.
A prime source, you might say?
You might even say it's your prime source, yeah.
Yeah.
You know I'm starting the podcast out with that trailer, with the audio from the trailer at least.
Nice. Yes,
that we just released.
Please do.
Oh, I thought you were going to cut out my Battletoads beatboxing and intro us with that.
I'm gonna do a song with that now.
You're welcome.
Yep, thank you.
All right, let's wrap things up here.
Alrighty.
Let's see. You can leave feedback for us on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter. We're Co-Optimist without the dash. We're on Facebook. We're on Google+. Just look for Co-Optimist.
We got a bitchin' trailer courtesy of One Lock Vincent.
That's right. Yeah, we got a great trailer out there on our YouTube channel.
It's number one on his to-do list.
It was. He can cross that shit off.
Yeah.
Done. Yeah.
Let's see that check mark. Yeah.
Hey,
there we go.
Progress.
Nice.
Sweet. Let's go to the cheat code hotline. Are we doing Game Genie? Oh, we got a Game Genie code exclusive.
Yeah. We're going to go. Mike, we're going to talk about a co-op game here.
All right, Mike. Drop
Everybody
it.
Knows what we got? The Contra code. But that only gives you 30 lives. 30 lives for chumps.
What if I want 99?
What if I could tell you you had infinite lives?
Let's do this!
Infinite. Let's do this!
Yeah. So by punching in the Game Genie code SLAIUZ, you get infinite lives. And if you would like to keep the weapon that you were holding when you died, you can add on the code GXIIUX, and that will make you a spreadshot motherfucker.
Okay.
Roll through the whole damn game with a spreadshot.
All right. You want to leave us a voicemail like our boy Roy? 646-926-6748.
Holla at you, boy!
Be like Roy!
Be like Roy. We like voicemails. Thanks, Roy, for your voicemails. We appreciate it. I think that's it. Let's see. We'll have one more episode before E3, so we can do kind of an E3 preview next time. How's that sound, Locke?
Yeah, we could do that. I cool. I'll be here.
All right. So what's today? That's episode 125. It's May 19th. Thanks for listening. All right. Hey, so funny thing on the